Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the most electrifying must-listen-to podcast in sports entertainment. Welcome to FFC. I'm your host, Damian Ellinghouse, accompanied as always by good friend and lover of hard-to-figure-out complicated podcast setups, Ryan Doyle.
How are you, sir?
I'm good, Ryan. But once again, we are not alone, are we, Ryan?
I think we're alone now.
I think you did that last time. You only get to do that like one more time and then you can't do it again.
Okay.
That's right. We are joined by, we're lucky enough to have back on the show one of our nearest and dearest friends, a mainstay in the Long Island metal scene. Since somewhere around 2005, he has become known for having one of the most effortlessly aggressive voices and distinct voices in the scene, as well as being a tireless workhorse and cheerleader, not just for his own bands, but for others as well. He has bounced between many styles over the years, from his Nine Inch Nails inspired industrial solo project NQA and brutal old school death metal project in Morbid Curiosity, to drawling southern tinged hardcore in Carve Your Niche and brutal gent inspired groove in Thracian. But never content to tie himself to one area, he has most recently joined up with the first male chef to beat Bobby Flay and leader of Beauty in Essex Restaurants, Chef Brian Sow, alongside Wings Denied drummer Alec Kossoff and Tiger Flowers bassist Will Gomez, to bring their take on hardcore and metalcore to life in Lost Becomes. So, please welcome back certified forklift driver, the artist formerly known as Richard Young, amateur shitty beer drinker, lover of friend beers, and unabashed new metal stan, Anthony Capozzi.
That is me. I'm not Hello. That nice, though. But you got it.
How are you? Well, you are a certified forklift driver, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. OSHA.
Super OSHA fucking sexy. Baby. That's what I'm talking about. Thank you so much for being on our humble little podcast for this world exclusive first ever interview. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, bud. I don't know if this is the first interview because I was on Yogi Rebin's Applied Science podcast. Two, three weeks ago.
I'm gonna consider
first wrestling
different.
Podcast. I actually got a lot of heat for not being on like two other ones, but hey, I'm here.
Oh man, do we got a feud going now?
Yes.
Oh, let's start it. I'm about feuds.
Are you Are you pulling a Ric Flair? Are you driving outside the NASA Coliseum in your limo, waiting for Vince to sign you to a contract?
Yeah, baby. Who's paying me?
Not us, but you're here and we already have your time. So,
all right, you got it.
Deal with it. So, we're going to give our exclusive world premiere interview, first ever of its kind, to Anthony here. And then we're going to talk a little bit about a truly zany match that happened recently. But first, dedicated listeners, we all know what comes next. What are we drinking today, Anthony?
Oh, dude, I got... This is probably the best stuff on earth. Right here?
It's going to be water.
H2O, baby! Yep,
it was water.
Yeah.
I just had some Chinese. Some Sing Me. Classic Sing Me. Merrick, represent. Support your local spots, you know? I'm just a hometown boy.
Yeah, you got that classic Merrick tap water straight from the sewers.
Straight from the sewers, put through the same dirty Brita filter that I've had for over 5 years now.
You know what's funny? Like, my parents still have their Brita filter. Like, they had the Brita, like, canister, like, the same one from, like, 95. And I always wondered if my parents
Nobody
ever changed
that shit.
The guests literally always bring water. And this is bad because I know Anthony's listened to the show before, so it was an intentional decision.
I was like, listen, I'm not drinking a beer right now. I'm on like a cleanse. It was this past weekend. I've just gotten blacked out two nights in a row. And then Nick Lee made me drink a little bit on Sunday. It's his fault. Blame him.
Hair the dog, baby.
Ridiculous.
That's what he said. And then I was like, no, I'm just back in where I was like a few hours ago.
You couldn't have at least brought like some fucking cucumber juice or some shitty smoothie. It had to just be water in a Simpsons cup.
I'd rather him bring me water in the Simpsons cup.
Shout out Deep Cover for giving me this cup.
That's a nice cup, man. That's got to be like season one merch.
I think it's Burger King.
With fucking real bad middle-aged alcoholic Homer.
Oh, yeah, it's boy. From 1990.
The Walter Matthau Homer Simpson.
Come on now, boy. All right. Well, Ryan, do you also have water?
No, I have an exquisite treat this week.
Okay.
Well, it's that time of the season, and it's my favorite time of the beer season because Trogs has just released their seasonal batch of Nugget Nectar. Uh-huh. Nugget Nectar, easily top 10, maybe even top 5 beers for me. It is a IPA brewed at 7.5, but it's in the style of an amber red ale. Just absolutely fucking delicious. One of the best beers, hands down. And I love it. But it's only here for just a short time. It's like the McRib of beers, so get it while you can.
I was excited to get the Mad Elf from them over the holiday season.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay, well, I've got something here by Jackalope Brewing, and this is the Goliath. It is an Imperial Bear Walker Ale brewed with maple syrup.
Where'd you get that, beer distributor?
I got it at the local beer shop around the corner that is surprisingly detailed. And it says, most bears are big, but Goliath was biggest. An icon of heft, a legend of thickness. This Imperial Bear Walker is our maple brown ale, made bigger and bolder, Alaskan in scale. Sip on this tribute, oh drinkers who dare, and brave beer as burly as Kodiak bears. It was a poem, but I didn't read it like one.
How do you read a poem?
You say it in the meter and rhyme, and I just didn't do that because my piddly brain didn't really pick up that it was trying to be a poem until it was too late. Couldn't back down. So normally we crack and sip. So Anthony, just do me a solid and just pretend to open up make the mouth noise. Okay, but not yet. Don't hold on. Okay, Ryan, do you have your can ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we crack. Go ahead. There we go. And now we can sip.
Oh yeah.
That's unpleasant.
Some ASMR, baby.
Ooh, that is a burly boy. I'm going to get drunk by the end of this. It'll be my fifth day in a row. All right. Enough of that. Let's get straight into the interview. And this time, I'm going to let my esteemed co-host start us off here.
Can you tell me this? So you like music? No, I'm kidding. Anthony, how are you, my friend?
Good, bud.
Well, Anthony, you recently started up yet another project. This one in the form of Lost Becomes, but I wanted to take you back a little bit. To the days of Battle of the Bands, located at Medicine in Levittown.
Yeah.
It's funny, people in the Long Island music scene, they'll have like their own spot. Like the older heads, they'll identify more with like Ground Zero and Belmore or the Downtown. Our generation was kind of a little more familiar with they had many. I know it as Club Ritual. It was also known as 2686 or some shit across the street from Medicine on Hempstead Turnpike.
Yeah, I believe 2686 was where I saw Vision of Disorder, and it was like probably the last metal show that they had.
Yeah, with God Forbid, right?
No, I saw them with Canderia. God Forbid was the first night.
First night, that's correct, yes. And, after that, it kind of went from the Crazy Donkey to, I guess, Zebra Club to fucking Ollie's Point. Now,
Zebra Club.
Formerly Revolution, rest in peace. What was your favorite local venue to play at all these years?
Shit. Favorite local? Actually, I was just talking about this. I mean, home has been Amityville Music Hall for so long. And I was just reminiscing about, like, goddamn, I haven't been there in a year. I think the last show I saw there was Resistor with Johnny Booth. And it was, yeah. And it was a little heartbreaking to think about, like, shit, I haven't seen live music in that long. But it has to be Amityville Music Hall. I mean, it's scary enough to where you don't want to take a shit in the bathroom, but it's home enough that you can spill a beer on someone and not be scared about getting knocked out.
I have taken a shit in that bathroom before.
Me too. The male and female.
Yeah, you do what you have to. I guess, like, at this point, I guess it's a little bit hard to list any other venue for just about anyone that's played on Long Island, isn't it?
Like Revolution was sick. I mean, shit, Medicine, I barely remember.
Revolution kind of like if you could imagine, like, the venue being, like, you know, this old kindred Japanese spirit that's traveled from one shutdown venue to another.
Yeah.
Like, that definitely went to Revolution.
Revolution really separated you from the crowd a little too much.
I get that.
And yeah. Amityville Music Hall makes you feel like you're in it with, like, a thin line separating you and the crowd. But AMH, I miss those nights, even when you didn't know who was playing. You would just take an Uber and just get obliterated safely, yep. You know? Hey, not yo. Like they ever overserved or anything.
Of course not. You know what's funny, man? Like, I never had the pleasure of playing a live show, but, like, you know, whenever I imagine myself playing, it's not like at MSG or anything. It's like at Amityville Music Hall. And, like, yeah, it's like, you know, it's like the local, like, clubhouse for, like, all the bands. And, like, I appreciated, you know, they went through their renovation a couple of years ago and, you know, they really took the time to put effort into it. You know, I hope to go to another show there. I know they were running a GoFundMe to raise funds for the venue. So that's still going on.
People working there. Yeah, I believe.
If that's still going on, I implore anybody who's enjoyed a show there, who has gone there to see their friend's band play there, who have played there themselves, to go on there and donate, because it's important that place stays alive throughout all this. And hopefully within the next coming months, when we're all good to go and we get our Bill Gates microchips, we can go see shows there again.
I already got mine, getting my second one tomorrow, property of Microsoft.
Damn, someone's going to know where you are at all times, as if you didn't already have a GPS in your pocket.
Well, now it's in my blood, so it's a little more mobile, you know?
Dude, I've always wanted to be a robot. Let's go.
Yeah, let's fucking get into it. Fuck yeah. We'll just all be things from Blade Runner. That went well.
Yeah, I've never seen Blade Runner. It's been on my list.
Well, at least you know with the Californias in out west with the fires and shit, you're like, Blade Runner 2049. It looks like Blade Runner 2049 over here. Meanwhile, people are, like, inhaling, like, smoke and, like, coughing their eyes out. It's like, yeah, it's really cool. Really cool comparison, guys.
Yeah.
But, Anthony, so you incorporated a lot of different musical styles, you know, not just metal. Like, you're a big fan of industrial, of course.
Yeah.
Certain you know, I would even say punk elements. What's like your day one band to you?
It's funny because I was actually just talking about this over the weekend. Day one, shit. I was really into, like, when I was young, 7-Eleven by me would have these singles of, like, pop artists like 98 Degrees, Backstreet Boys, Britney Spears, Mandy Moore, representing the OG. I would buy those and I'd be like, I really like listening to music. And this is after, like, seeing Michael Jackson on MTV and being like, I want to be able to do that, which, like, that's like the start of it all. But then, like, metal, I grew up with my brother having a ska band in the basement. And me going, man, I fucking hate this. Like, I really hate ska. But then he would stop practice and he would play Rage Against the Machine. And I'd be like, what the fuck is this? And my mom would go, you're four. You can't say that. So then Like, I didn't know what Rage Against the Machine was. I didn't know it was a thing. I just thought it was like a noise coming from the basement. I was like, I like this. Okay. And then I moved away. And then my brother got Follow the Leader by Korn.
Nice.
And I would beg him, please, please play Korn. Like, I need to hear this noise. I didn't know what music it was. I was just like, this noise, like, I need it. I need Korn. Like, give me more Korn.
That's pretty interesting that you mentioned the compilation CDs, because that's like that's a lost like art form, because we were certainly like exposed to that. One of my first CDs I ever bought were like Now One, dating myself here hardcore.
Yeah.
But it's funny that you mentioned Follow the Leader, because I distinctly remember on Sunrise Highway, next to Da Vinci Tattoo, there used to be a CD store in there. And I picked up the copy of Now, but at the same time, I saw the poster for Follow the Leader with the girl doing the hopscotch off the cliff. And I was like, oh, wow, that seems cool. Like, not literally having any expectation to what was going to be on that CD.
Think of it, like, if you think of us in our youth, like, we watched Spider-Man. Like, it was just like, everyone watched Spider-Man and Batman, no matter what.
Yeah.
It was just like wrestling. Like, everyone watched it no matter what. And who was that? McFarlane? He did the Follow the Leader.
Spawn.
Yeah,
Yeah.
But then he did the cartoon of Spider-Man on Fox.
That's right.
Like that same artwork. So maybe that's... this is off the top of my head now. Maybe that's how we connected. And that was smart of Korn to be like, hey, crossing that... whatever that word is.
Rubicon.
Huh. Yeah. That's an interesting idea, like as a way for somebody to break in. And you know what? It's interesting that you bring up like Korn and Rage Against the Machine as being like kind of the bands that helped form where you are now. Because one of the things that I wanted to ask you is, you know, like I had mentioned earlier, like anyone that knows you knows that you're like unashamedly in love with nu metal, specifically like you love like Mudvayne, Limp Bizkit, like you're very not embarrassed of like that's music that you're into and have been into for almost your whole life. So what I wanted to know is from your perspective, right? Despite the mockery that nu metal got like in the later 90s and 2000s, there has been like a revival in the last couple of years, you know, bands like Islander and Tetrarch and Deficit, you know, and then like some other bands kind of bringing back that style, like later Bring Me the Horizon can be seen as a little bit of like that industrial, more nu metal sound. So
yeah.
As well as like a kinder look back to bands like Korn and Limp Bizkit and Linkin Park. And Korn specifically, I feel like, has had a huge revival with like the Serenity of Suffering and like, what was the last album? Not the empty, the Nothingness or just the Nothing?
I think it's the Nothing.
Which like that album was fucking crazy good. So my question is, what is it about that style that made you gravitate towards it? You mentioned like the noise of it all. But what like kept you in that lane even as you broadened your horizons? And to people like me who like don't love nu metal, what would be your selling points for it?
It's really just the groove. The beat and the groove is everything, and it's how you play with a rhythm, like even using words and the pronunciation of those words. Like when I was younger, I was real into pop music, but what's funny is like my mom hated the Beatles and I wasn't allowed to listen to the Beatles, but I had Michael Jackson. Huh. And Michael Jackson is one of the most aggressive pop stars there are. Like he probably could have been one of the best metal vocalists if, I don't know, he was in a metal band. But then again, he worked with Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah, that's probably songs. The like, closest that he will come to a metal song, and he fucking killed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, dude, he had like raw energy, and that was punk and metal all at one time. Like, he was a pop star because he wrote great R&B and pop music, like, and he's an icon. But so you take the like that rhythm that you love and the catchiness of the rhythm, and dude, I don't know, like nu metal is that, like, and most metal now, like I was just talking to someone about Oracle by Kitty. Like, dude, all those riffs on that album, a lot of hardcore bands rip off today without even knowing, like, that they're ripping it off.
I think that that's definitely fair. And like one of the, you know, they're a band that like got lumped into this, but they're not fully, but you look at a band like System of a Down, right? For sure. Like that first album is like a nu metal classic, but then like Toxicity and everything after that kind of becomes so varied that it's hard to just nail it down. But when I think about how simple a lot of those riffs are, like just alternating zero and one, just open one, yeah, over and over again, and just creating some of the heaviest shit I've ever heard that to this day, 20, 25 years later, I feel like the same thing. I hear a lot of bands, not aping, but a lot of bands taking that inspiration, just being like, fuck it, strip it down, make the chugs simple. And you're right. Like there is something to be said about the use of groove in that music that I feel like the modern day hardcore scene takes a lot of inspiration from.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say with nu metal that the ones that quote unquote survived were the ones that were had, you know, music that were that transcended them, you know, beyond the nu metal category. For example, System of Down used a lot of Armenian folk riffs. Mm-hmm. Deftones obviously based themselves in a lot of like, you know, 80s, you know, pop and shoegaze. Yes, yeah, of course. And, yeah, you know, to the, at this point where, you know, they're not even like a nu metal band anymore. They're like a, you know, like a dream pop metal band almost. But,
yeah,
you know, is it obviously like nu metal was like the last like gasp for like major stadium rock tours. Do you think it's, do you think they unfairly got swept up with like the radio rock of like the mid 2000s?
Yeah, no, I think so. Cause like you take a band like Puddle of Mud and they kind of bastardized those, like those Nirvana and nu metal riffs, like the aggression of nu metal, like she fucking hates me, like dude, it's just it steals the Nirvana tone and the nu metal rage and rhythm and just ruins it and makes it not special. I mean, shit, I'm just not a Puddle of Mud fan. I'm not really one to talk negatively about a band because you like what you like and art is art, but yeah, just those that last gasp, I don't know, it just gets watered down.
I think that's definitely fair, and I also think that there are a lot of bands like that, like Ryan said, like the bands that have survived that, like most of the time transcended whatever the confines of that genre was, right? Like you mentioned System of a Down and Deftones, right? Korn is another example of a band that like is so prototypical of nu metal, but also their shit doesn't sound like any other band really in that genre. They're very distinctly themselves and they've reinvented themselves constantly. Same thing with a band like Slipknot, you know, it's more than just like, ooh, fast talking and heavy riffs. Like they're always evolving. Then you had other bands, I guess, kind of like Limp Bizkit that, you know, not that they didn't remain popular, but it was kind of the same thing. Linkin Park went way more pop and it like was successful, but fans didn't love it that much. Yeah. And then, yeah, bands like Puddle of Mud or like your Nickelbacks that just kind of took the essence of it, but just kind of turned into what Disturbed after their second album went, just kind of watered down somewhat heavy riffs. I think that's a fair assessment. Now, obviously, you've played innumerable shows with countless bands over your 13 plus years in the scene. So to pivot a little bit.
Man, when you add a number, it gets rough.
It's fucking insane, right? Yeah. So tell us about how you linked up with Brian, Will, and Alec. Did you ever share the stage with like their other bands, or like were you aware of them or Brian for some time before you guys got together?
No. It was actually a completely new relationship. I actually owe this all to Nick Lee and Vin Romes from Moontooth. Like this wouldn't have happened without them. Like I actually just thanked Nick again over the weekend. Vin, I'm not thanking you. You're a piece of shit. But, yeah, like, so they linked us up cause I was having just a talk with Vin in the backyard of Bub's house, socially distanced, you know, playing it safe. And we were drinking beers and I rode my bike over just to say what's up. And he was like, hey, I have this band. I know you're in Thracian right now, but this band, I really just hear you over it. And I'm like, all right, like, fucking another band. Like, I'm set. I was at the time, Thracian was looking for two new members. Thanks, Damien. You helped me fill one of those spots.
Yeah.
And Shadow Kev. But so, like, he gave me Brian's Instagram. He said, just add him and message him, and I'll tell him, like, hey, my boy's messaging you. Now, this is, like, I look at Brian's Instagram, I'm like, who the fuck? Like, why? Oh, he's a chef? Okay. And he has a band? Well, he's verified. He's not gonna see me. I have, like, 300 Instagram followers. I'm, like, a piece of shit. Like, it doesn't matter. So I'm like, yo, Vin, your boy never hit me back, blah, blah, blah. Then all of a sudden, like, 20 minutes later, after I texted Vin, who's horrible at texting or even calling, I get this IM back from Brian, and he's like, hey, man, what's up? And I'm like, oh, shit, here we go. I have to, like, make a new friend, which everybody knows I'm just a whore, and, like, I make friends really easily, especially when I'm just drinking. Like, I don't know if it's a good problem or a bad. It's just I end up going to a lot of weddings, you know? So, yeah. So, Brian and I started talking on Instagram, and I was like, hey, I heard you're looking for a singer. He's like, yeah, we're talking to a few, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, all right, here's some of my work. And I sent them Thracian, and I was like, this is what I'm capable of doing. I put my all into this. Let me know what you think. If it's a no, that's fine too. Just let me know, just so I don't, like, waste your time or my time hitting you up. Yeah, I'll get back to you. And I'm sitting there like, man, another fucking tryout. I'm not doing this. Like, it's not even fucking worth it. Like, I have so much going on with Thracian. I can't, blah, blah, blah. And then if I finally sat and, like, talked to Brian on Instagram, and, like, we were talking about Your Mom's House, like, the podcast, which I'm a huge fan of, Tom Segura and Christina P. Like, that's what, like, usually help gets me through my days or even weeks, like, just podcasts in general. And we're talking about that. And then I was like, What are you guys looking for? We want to do this and this. Okay. Here's a song. Here's three songs. Pick one and just send us a demo. And I'm like, yeah, I'll send you the demo. 2 weeks later, I send it to them because I mean, trying to find time to scream on top of music in your apartment during a pandemic because you can't go to a studio. This is, like, early stages.
Yeah.
Like, it was just the summer, and people were just, for the first time, stepping outside going, oh, we're not going to die if we go outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I recorded the vocals, and I was like, man, I had fun with it. I was like, this is a really fun song. And it was actually Focused, our first single. And that's the first song that I wrote with the band, technically.
Oh, a little bit of lore there.
Yeah, but it's not their first song, which is funny. But so I wrote that, I recorded the vocals, and Brian they all kind of poker faced me. They were like, okay, good. We will get back to you. And I was like, what does that mean? So then Brian said, okay, in 3 days later, Brian goes, okay, in 2 weeks, we want to meet up, but you have to get a COVID test before coming in. And I'm like, okay, I have no problem with that. And I'm like, yeah, I'll just go get it. At first, I'm like, how the fuck do you get a COVID test? Like, does this cost money? Like, I was like, what do they need? Do they need blood? Like, I just learned about the Q-tips, and I'm like, oh, this is nothing. I have a panic attack in the fucking walk-in because I'm a germaphobe. Everybody knows that. Don't touch my face or my hands.
You were proven right, weren't you?
Yeah. So then I get the test, and I'm like, so when do I find out? And they'll be like, oh, well, get it back to you in 7 days. And I'm like, all right, I have like 2 weeks until I'll be fine. The test doesn't come back for like literally like that Sunday that I was supposed to meet up with them. I get the result like 15 minutes before I'm about to leave. And that whole day I was like, you know, I'm not going to go. I'm just not going to go. I was like, I had so much anxiety because I was like, new people, COVID, is like, am I being safe? And we were incredibly safe. I mean, we only met up for like 2 hours, but everyone's responsible. We still get tested. But yeah, so then I was just like, guys, I don't have my test results back yet. And they're like, okay, just let's wait like an hour and we'll see what happens. 15 minutes later, I get the results back.
It was a sign, man.
And I was like, God damn it. I don't want to go.
you had talked yourself out of it. You talked yourself up.
Yeah. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Never say like no. Like say yes to everything. And I went. I practiced with them. And I was like, I really don't know the first song that I wrote well, Focus. And I'm just like, I can read off of it and see what happens. And dude, the first practice was, it felt like I've been jamming with them for 20 years. I was like, this sucks. Why do I have to join another band? But so I was like, damn, I want to do this so bad. And so I was like, okay, like the end of practice, we all sat down and I was like, here's my expectation. Like, if you guys are into it, just let me know and we'll play from there. I'm not looking to join yet. And Will, the bassist, sits down on the couch and goes, dude, you're in.
Nice.
And I'm like, what? And he goes, you're just in. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You don't even know me. And he goes, I love your voice. I fucking listen to this demo you recorded all the time. Dude, you're sick. You're like the best vocalist we've ever jammed with, that I've ever jammed with. And I'm like, means a lot. I don't take compliments well. And I'm going to go kill myself in my car. I'll talk to you guys later.
I'm going to go throw up.
But yeah, so Will kind of let the cat out of the bag. And he was like, hey, like, I want you in the band. And then Brian was like, hold on. Let's give it some time. And then they all looked at each other. Just like Alec gave like the nod, I think I remember. And Brian goes, you know what? Fuck it. If you want it, it's yours.
I'm going to think about it, guys. I'll see you later.
And I was like, I'll let you know. I think I even called you, Doyle, like that day. And I was like, I just jammed with this band. Like, and you're like, oh, Brian Sal. And I was like, why don't I know him? Like, I even like still to this day, like, how have we not met? Like, but it's also just because I don't hang out in the city. But so, like, the next day I texted them and I was like, guys, I'm in. Like, I was going to wait a week. Like, some fucking relationship bullshit. Like, but I'm down. Let's go. Let's do this shit, Jones Beach.
And that's great, man. You know, you explained, like Damien mentioned before, the lore of everything. And like, you know, it's just great how like, you know, certain things work out like that. You know, it's like in, you know, when Mother Love Bone, their lead singer, Andrew Wood, tragically passed away, you know, Chris Cornell was like, yeah, I got this guy who surfs a lot down in San Diego. You should try him out. And that turned out to be Eddie Vedder.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm no Eddie Vedder, but...
Well, listen, you know, there's always a story behind everything, and that's certainly a great story.
Are you sure you're not a little Eddie Vedder in the making? Are we sure?
I don't know. I've no snarky joke either. I got nothing. if people were screaming my lyrics to me on a beach randomly, I'd be like, sick, dude. Talk to you guys later.
You wouldn't be pissed off like Eddie Vedder and like go into like a 2-year no, like, not fucking
screaming
depression.
Back going, don't sing my song.
That's not how you sing it. No, I honestly love hearing the lore about this shit. And like, it's funny because you talked about, you know, just like the chemistry of all of you guys you know, coming together and just feeling like you had played forever. And I think it was Will who was talking about how, like, they were jamming for a little bit before that. And, like, really, I think he made a joke about Brian's riffs being shit and then, like, honing them. But when I listen to the tracks, it almost as if, like, as time goes on and you drop more and more singles, like, I really do feel like you guys are very cohesive together. And I've always felt that you're a little bit of a switchblade. It's a wrestling reference, guys. I made a wrestling joke.
I'm the knife guy.
You're a knife pervert. That's who you are. I've always felt that you really, like, your style is uniquely yours, and it's always you in your style. But I feel like you effortlessly meld into so many different, like, forms over the years. Like, you've just, like, made these little adjustments to your voice from Nish to Thracian to Lost Becomes, and it's really cool to see. And I almost feel like I can hear that chemistry in the tracks.
I appreciate that, man. Like, again, I don't do well with compliments, but I mean, as long as people notice that I take the time to care for the song, I guess. I usually when I was younger in high school, I would fill a song with, I would stress out, this may be the last song I ever write, so I want the words to be perfect. And now I went, the words don't even fucking matter, but they do at the same time. But take it easy and just work with the song. Like, don't overdo it and don't underdo it, if that's a word.
Absolutely. That makes so much sense to me. And it's a lesson that I had to learn as I, like, came up in my regard as well, because I've always been an overwriter. I'm always the guy that's been like, let's put a fucking 2.5 minute solo verse here and then we're going to have 15,000 parts. And, like, Transience's first album is a lot of that and it works really well. But my bass player, John Antonick, who's been one of my best friends, I've been playing with him in band since I was like 15. He's always espoused to me, like, dude, you don't have to do that much for a song to be great. But sometimes it's worth it to go fucking ham. So, like you said, like, it's not about forcing your way onto a track. It's about, like, take what the music gives you and just go with the flow from there. And since you're talking about your writing process here, I got to tell you, Tony, you're real great at segues here. That was my next question, right? So your bassist said that the name Lost Becomes stems from the idea of growth coming from loss and learning from past mistakes. And you guys' first single, Focus, was, in your words, about finding the truth within a relationship. Who are truly your friends? Who has your back? How badly do you need or want them in your life? And when you look throughout your lyrics throughout the years, trust, hopelessness, mourning, and recovery seem to be common themes throughout your music. So I was wondering, could you expand a bit on that and talk to us about some of your writing influences and what you tend to draw from when you're writing?
So I've always dabbled, like, so Chino Moreno has always said he likes to write a story that's not about himself. And then I think it was him that also said, then he listens back and he goes, oh shit, this is about me. I just had no idea that I was writing about myself.
Almost like a third person kind of view.
Yeah. A lot of the times I'll write lyrics to a song about a situation and I'd be like, oh, it wasn't really about this. It was truly about this thing that was kind of sitting in the back of my mind, like, just festering there. And I thought I was annoyed at this one thing, but it's really this. Like, maybe I need to work on this about myself. Like, so it's just like a learning experience along with that. And I've always taken, like, the Phil Anselmo, like, write about 5 things in one song. And maybe, like, it doesn't matter if it's all on the same topic, but they still fit the same mood. You know what I mean? Like, so that's where I've kind of stemmed. I've never been a concept guy. I really don't love it. But then with these songs, with the Lost Becomes guys, I was like, there is this theme. Like, because, I mean, Focus, I wrote everything not knowing there was a theme. And I was like, oh shit. I still managed. It was a happy accident. Like, it still worked. Like the lyrical content, like, but like loss is unfortunately a big part of my life. Like, I've lost many people, even not in death, like just people coming in and out. And that's like a big topic. Like, again, who's your real friend? Who will be there even when you're at your lowest? So that's you. I've probably trailed off a little bit there, but
no, that's fine. It's a great way of looking at it. I mean, when people, you know, espouse the idea of losing someone, it's usually in the act of death, but you're absolutely right, man. You know, sometimes a more tragic loss could be someone that just exited your life unexpectedly, you know? And
like people that you hung out with in high school or even elementary school, going that far back, like there's some people that I haven't talked to in probably 15 years now. And it's like, I'll be sitting there going, huh, whatever happened to that person? All right. Like, we just lost touch.
Yeah.
Often you find that like pain and tragedy are the most powerful motivators in many forms of art. You know, it's always the emotional extremes, love, lust, pain, you know. So, I mean, it makes sense that that's what people tend to draw on, and that, you know, especially being in this band, maybe that even has a little bit to do with the chemistry, knowing that there is this recurring theme that fits so seamlessly into the type of topics that you've written about. And like the most recent NQA release had a track that you dedicated to your late grandmother. And I felt that that release as a whole was like some of the most cohesive work that you would put under that project. It really captured this like really hauntingly beautiful soundscape of like emotional pain and kind of really bearing your soul out there. So it makes sense that this would be where you would draw from for a band like this that's specifically for those types of topics.
Yeah. Wow. You went deep with that. I've recently forgotten that I released that last year. Cause like that was like my COVID project. Like,
yeah.
Damien went all Nardwar on you.
Yeah.
No, it means a lot. Like I don't really love talking about NQA, but I still care about it. Like, and not a lot of people know that I do it. Like, I'll pick up a guitar and someone will go, oh, do you know how to play? And I'm like, nope. and they're like, really? Like, you just picked that up like you knew what you were doing. I was like, I play, but I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm not a guitarist. I'm a vocalist.
And an arranger.
Yeah, like, I've played around enough with free recording programs, like, to learn that aspect of it. But yeah, NQA, it's been my, like, I don't know, my coping mechanism through boredom.
I mean, that makes sense. And not every project has to be, like, the most important project to you for it to be something really gratifying to work towards. So that makes sense. Now, to start pivoting towards what this is now the second guest interview where listeners have had to get through 50 minutes of no one talking about wrestling, but you know, suck it. That's what happens.
Sorry, guys.
That's what happens.
We are a lifestyle podcast.
We are, and that's what happens when you have high profile guests coming on to give you exclusive interviews, the first of their kind.
Well,
so that's what happens.
Let's segue naturally here. So, I mean,
I'm like a mid-card guest, you know. I've been on before.
Don't fucking sell yourself short. You're not Cody.
So, you know, I mean, it's hard to not talk about fucking music when it comes to wrestling and like how metal was ingrained into the Attitude Era, especially. Anthony, what is your favorite theme song of all time?
First song that comes to mind is probably the Hardy Boys theme.
Oh, banger. Nice. Absolute fucking banger.
And dude, it's everywhere. Because, shit, what is it? It's like that free music that you can get, non-copywritten music or whatever.
No, it's very funny that you mentioned that, because when my parents listen to the news, sometimes they'll have like little segue pieces. And one of them,
and they play it.
Yeah, they play the Hardy Boys theme song. I think they played like Lita's old theme song.
Inked Master, me and Harris Ange, excuse me, we watched Ink Master. That was a show that we used to kill some time over the weekends and weeknights. Like, and I'm sitting there like, holy shit, here's the Hardy Boys theme.
Yeah.
Like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And like, I'd just be like, you don't recognize this? She'd be like, why is this here? And I'm like, oh, it's like
public domain,
not copywritten or something. Like WWE doesn't own it. Like it's just free music.
Oh, what was I reading the other day? Oh yeah, that's right. Booker T theme song was actually just like an additive on like some like Jock Jam soundtrack for like sport and like introductions and shit like that. And it became like,
his oh really?
Own. Yeah.
You know, what's so funny about that is so the segment that we're going to do tonight, I had the exact Booker T is involved in it, right? And every song I was like, wow, you know, you forget that WWF and like WWE really, there were some killer fucking tracks for people's entrance theme songs. And then there was Booker T. It's just do 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 do.
Yeah.
And it's just like this lo-fi fucking like synth, just something going do 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 do. So that makes sense.
It sounds like it belongs on NBA Jam.
Oh yeah, for sure. Just repeating over and over again. And you know, it makes sense also, you know, like you being a lifelong wrestling fan and you being into the specific type of heavy music that you're into, the two melded together so seamlessly when we were that age. Like if you were into heavy music at all, and I feel like some people got into heavy music because of some of those themes. I mean, you think about like, you know, Motorhead doing The Game, and like that theme is to this day one of my favorite fucking like themes anywhere of all time.
Yeah,
but so many bands had great fucking tracks like that. Like Rob Van Dam's entrance theme is a fucking banger.
Yeah.
And so I suppose this could be a good time to segue, but I will ask one last question before we move to the main.
My favorite WWF album is Aggression.
Is that the one from 2000 that had like Anthrax on it?
And
no, it was a bunch of rap groups using the WWF themes, not even E. This is like early on, like
oh, Run yeah, DMC that's right. did
Degenerate. What? Degenerate who?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, you guys got a free concert.
I've never actually listened to that. That was great. Thank you for that. Tiny
There's
Desk
a Kane
concert.
Song where it's like, I won't stop till I see blood. Real bad. It's all new metal.
Oh, I got to listen to that. No. So my last question before we move on was, so, you know, we've spent the last hour talking about, you know, your most powerful instrument, your voice, right? And how well known I feel that your voice has become in the scene at large. But last year, your voice became popular for a slightly different reason when other friend of the podcast, Deep Cover Vintage Store owner Will Wagner and yourself started the Friend Beers podcast, which we were fortunate enough to collaborate with on early on in our two-parter Friendly Fucking Casual Beers. Now, you guys took a break in September 2020 after 51 episodes of, in your words, nothing. Now, given your experience in recording music, how would you compare doing a podcast? And what do you feel you've gained from the experience? And is there any chance of a revival of sorts in the future?
Revival, there may be something in the future. Time is a factor. I remember I was getting burnt out. And also the reason it ended was just COVID was so new still. And like Will was still going out. I was still working. Like, well, Will wasn't going out. I mean, he was still working and like going places. So it was like iffy for us to meet up. Like I was uncomfortable. Like I was like, I don't want to give you anything and I really can't afford you to give me something. So we would record in the backyard and sometimes episodes would be fucked over due to inclement weather. And, I mean, there could be something in the future. I don't want to give anything away, but I also don't want to give hope.
Right. Hope is bad.
It's always there in the back pocket.
Yeah. we still have everything running. You can still hit us up, tag us, Friend Beers. And I believe Friend Beers won on Twitter, I think it was.
That sounds right, yeah.
But yeah, we're still there. I was thinking about using that as a umbrella, but I don't know. Well, let's see. We can see.
Time will tell. Okay, that's fair. Yeah. And you know,
even though that's not really an answer, but yeah.
No, it's okay. I mean, it's like asking for state secrets. I understand that you can neither conform,
it means
confirm
a lot
or deny.
That some people still want to hear it, but I don't know. Like, yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. That's fair. And like, do you feel that you gained anything from the experience of making one? Like, do you feel that you learned anything helpful with recording or anything like that?
The whole reason I wanted to start a podcast was to see if I could.
Okay.
Like I'm a big, like I said before, like never say no, always say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just wanted to see if I could, because I'm a big fan of podcasting. It's just like when you were younger and you're like, I can definitely do a power bomb.
Oh yeah, my teddy bear got all the Swanton bombs, of them.
And then you're like, you know, I think I could put a match together. You know what? I want to go into John's backyard and fucking, we're going to come out to entrance music and we're going to put a whole match together and we're going to hurt ourselves and then stop afterwards.
Mom, something happened.
I mean, what other reason does anybody actually start a podcast, right? I mean, like, we've told this story a bunch of times, but the whole idea of this podcast literally stemmed from me one day being like, huh, you know, it would be cool to do a podcast if I, like, actually had something to talk about. And then when I inevitably, like, or when I gravitated towards wrestling, I was like, Ryan knows a lot about wrestling. He would probably be really fun to do a podcast with. And it
little
was...
Little did he know...
And little did I know that he was a literal walking encyclopedia that makes me look bad every episode.
It's funny that you say that, because a lot of people, like, they talk to me and they're like, oh, you're the new metal and the fucking wrestling guy. I'm like, yeah, yeah. And Doyle came up to me one time and went, yo, how'd you feel about the Ric Flair and Bret Hart feud? And I'm like, I didn't watch WCW. I don't know what you're talking about. And he goes, really? I thought you were like the wrestling guy. I was like, well, now I'm a poser because you know more than I do.
That's how I feel. And that's why I'm grateful that I know more about Japanese wrestling now than Ryan. So there's something I can lord over his head like a little fucking carrot. But
great dynamic.
Thank you. Thank you. We work at it. But it was literally like it just stemmed from the idea of like, hey, why don't we fucking talk about like a mutual interest, and then being drunk enough somewhere for Ryan to be like, fuck yeah. But then me getting anxious and being like, fuck, maybe this was actually a bad idea. Yeah, no, like
that's a really funny story, because I went out for my friend's birthday in Bayshore and I was like on the verge of blacking out, and Damien texted me the idea for the podcast and I was like, yeah, let's fucking do it. And then like 6 months went by and I was like, oh wait, no, we were supposed to do that.
And it was partially because of my anxiety of being like, yo, I can't fucking have a podcast. Like, who the fuck cares about me? I am uninteresting as shit. And like,
how weirded out are you guys about hearing your own voices?
I hate it, but at the same time, you know, it's like, I understand it's a thing.
Oh, I absolutely hate it the most. Like, even singing, like, I feel like I'm a different person when I'm vocalizing and screaming, but mm-hmm. Like Damien, you can probably relate.
Yeah,
like I hate my talking voice. I hate most of the sounds I make.
It's and also it's, like, forced me to get better at speaking too, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I found it so helpful in so many ways, because like you said, you know, you did it just to see if you could, and for me it got this secondary effect of like, I wonder if I could like learn anything about sound engineering, you know, like, because I'm not going to pay someone to edit the podcast. So the first episode we released has like no effects on it at all. And it sounds like shit, because when I tried editing it, my files just started drifting apart and I couldn't get them back together. I could ask my fiance. It took me like, I was sitting at a computer for 4 hours. I got like 10 minutes worth of work done and I was like, I can't fucking do this. But then I like calm myself down and watch some videos. And now I'm, you know, I'm no fucking Dan Thabit, but like I know a little bit about what it takes to like make something sound decent. And like, I've learned so much about what the qualities of my voice looks like. And like, oh, I peak in these, this certain range. And like, oh, you know, if I cut out a little bit of my mids here, I can sound a lot clearer. Same thing with Ryan. Ryan hates his voice, but I feel like doing this, because his voice is so much different than mine, it's allowed me to experiment with someone else's voice, like the little fucking guinea pig that you are.
I also
you guys have a great dynamic. Yeah. Like when I listen, like truthfully, I don't listen every time, but I try to support as much as I can.
You're sweet.
Of course.
But it sounds great. You guys do a great job. Again, your interview questions are sick.
Thank you.
Doyle, you're okay too.
He's not bad.
Well, you know what it is? Like, I hate like listening back on something. I don't know if you experienced the same thing, Anthony, when it comes to like recording your music, but like, I hate listening back. Like, oh, I could have added this or I could have talked about this. So I like to just have a stream of consciousness.
The forever regret of everything.
But yes. It's not worth it. So, but you know, everybody has these same gripes and you know, you just got to roll with the punches. That's
yeah.
All.
And it is what it is, right? So like, now, once again, we're an hour in and our talking about wrestling has been minimal because, as Ryan mentioned, we are a lifestyle podcast. That's our gimmick. Our gimmick is we're a wrestling podcast that don't talk about wrestling anymore. We only have on interesting guests and we do nothing else. But as I mentioned, Anthony is a lifelong wrestling fan and he didn't just come on here to give us juicy Lost Becomes lore and to talk about himself. That was only half of the reason, because 2 days ago, when this was recorded, I guess it'll be like 6 days ago. Yeah, it's Tuesday. So 2 days ago when this was recorded, we witnessed the 28th iteration of the youngest, zaniest brother of the Trio de Steel Cage matches, the Elimination Chamber. Six men.
Wow, it's 28 years old?
28. It's not 28 years old. It's the 28th iteration because years often have two matches. But it is almost 20 years old.
That's scary enough.
I was like, shit, it's been around that long?
No.
My
it's
bad.
28th iteration, but like 19th year in existence. Six men walk in. One leaves a champion or with a guaranteed championship match at WrestleMania. But this is no ordinary six-man no disqualification steel cage match, my friends. The Elimination Chamber has two people start in the ring, while the others are locked in weird plexiglass pods. And every 5 minutes, another person gets released into the chaos, and the only way out is via pinfall or submission until there is one person left standing. Now, does everybody know where this idea initially came from? I have a little story that I'm going to tell, so just say yes or no.
Eric Bischoff?
I kind of know. I don't. Obviously, it's always Vince Russo. But can you give us a little give us a little tidbit,
Anthony,
David?
Anthony's answer is the colloquially understood answer, but there's a little bit of nuance to it. So this zany idea came to fruition in the middle of Shawn Michaels' comeback tour following his brutal unsanctioned match against real life and kayfabe frenemy Triple H. That was his first match in 5 years after 4 years after retiring in 1998 after a real bad back bump resulted in some fractured or herniated discs in his spine, I believe it was.
The casket match with Taker.
Yes.
So that's what definitely did it.
Yeah, because they used they didn't use the gimmick coffin. They used like an actual legit like fucking
just fucked him up,
and it just absolutely fucked him up. Yeah, but like, you know, obviously it wasn't just that. Like, he was going through a bad
yeah, he bad he lost his smile,
he was
man.
He was fucked. He lost his smile. So right, he comes back, he has this match. This is 2002. So Triple H had recently been awarded the WWF championship by Eric Bischoff after Brock Lesnar took the belt to SmackDown, because prior to that there was only one belt across the company. So they had to make a new belt similar to the Universal Championship. So they brought back the big gold belt used in WCW and NWA before that. They brought that back as the World Heavyweight Championship. So Bischoff awarded that to Triple H for being a good little boy. And Shawn was out for blood at this point, alongside Kane and Rob Van Dam, two men who Triple H had defeated prior to this match. His feud with Kane involved accusing Kane of raping the corpse of his lover that died in a car accident. So,
holy shit. Is that where the Katie Vick story originated from?
Was it is the, that it, it's that his girlfriend died in a car accident that he was responsible for. And then he looked the body up and down and he was like, she could still get it. And then she got it.
That was okay to be on TV.
And then Kane's friend, Kane's friend, the Hurricane, came out and did a little skit with a Triple H mask of him getting an enema. So, you know, real, real good, ruthless aggression era content, you know, just strong, strong stuff. So ultimately, the inaugural event would feature Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Rob Van Dam, Booker T, Kane, and Chris Jericho. Jericho and Triple H had had a lengthy feud like the year prior for the championship. And, you know, that was where the whole, you know, McMahon Triple H story kind of happens and then fizzles out. He gets his kayfabe divorce to Stephanie and all that. And then she gets with Chris Jericho. Think makes a joke about his dick
dirty,
being small if memory serves.
Disgusting trash bag hoe.
And then Booker T, who like was there primarily, you know, he was there primarily like he had some beef with Jericho, you know, throughout the last year. And he had was recently tagging with Goldust and then got a little bit more over after that. So to hear Chris Jericho talk about this in like a 2017 interview, he said, we didn't see it, the Elimination Chamber, until the day of the show in Madison Square Garden. And it's one of those things that you can tell was made by somebody who's not a wrestling person. It was very clunky. It was very dangerous. It's made out of real grated steel. You probably could have made it out of rubber and you wouldn't have known the difference. The walls were very stiff and they didn't make any noise when you hit them, so it hurts like hell and sounds like shit. Now, Triple H agreed, saying, we saw it for the first time when we were like, oh God, who built this? It was the most horrible thing ever. It took us all a day to figure out, like, how does this thing work? The doors are going to open. Like, what is this made out of? Everything hurt. It was just hard, rigid steel. Even the chain walls. Everybody was, oh yeah, but it's chained. Yeah, it's chained. It moved them about half an inch and then it was hit like hitting a lumpy bag of bricks. So no one was stoked on this idea. But to the question I posed earlier about, do you know who invented the Elimination Chamber? Well, Eric Bischoff introduced it. And it's a ridiculous fucking concept, right? Of course, Vince Russo has to be behind it. Well, Triple H may be surprised to learn that the non-wrestling person responsible for its creation was Triple H. That's right. While Bischoff introduced the match as a way to blow off the storyline, it was the game himself who had the idea, saying, I'm the one who invented it. I drew a square cage and I put four other squares in the corner and I said, it's six guys. Two starred in every few minutes, another cage opens up, and one more guy enters the fight, and everyone fights until there's one guy left. I thought it could be interesting because if the superstars involved have issues, then there's intrigue. But in typical WWE form, it was twice as big as I envisioned and twice as elaborate. We don't do anything small, so I should have known. When I stood in it, I thought, geez, please don't tell anybody this was my idea.
Damn, Trips.
So there's your answer. Trips invented the cage. Trips screwed Trips.
I think Triple H is probably... It's Kane, Badass Billy Gunn, Triple H.
Yeah,
those
I mean...
Those are my three top wrestlers.
Billy Gunn is your number two? I love to see it.
Yeah, dude. I'm an ass man.
Do you remember when Billy Gunn got like that little mini solo run after they tried to like make him...
Yeah, and they won the King of the Ring and I was like, this guy's going to win the belt. Fuck The Rock.
He didn't.
I hated The Rock. Yeah. And it didn't happen.
So is it fair to say that this was derivative from War Games?
Derivative. It's not necessarily that it's derivative, but absolutely heavily borrows from the idea of like guys starting off and then more guys getting added on as time goes on. Yeah, definitely like a bastardization of the War Games. And it, when you look at like the Elimination Chamber, especially the original one, it's so fucking clear that this is something that they came up with in the post-Attitude Era, like beginning of Ruthless Aggression Era. Like, it makes all the fucking sense in the world that they were like, this should be as awful for the performers as possible. And like, to your point, to Jericho and Triple H's point about, like, you know, this could have been made out of rubber, right? So the structure stood to 16 feet high, 36 feet in diameter, weighing a total of 16 tons, 10 of which consisted of steel. And the structure was redesigned in 2017 and is now a square instead of a circle and is 26 feet tall with a big stupid WWE logo on top of it because branding, pal. But like the original one, the outside is made of like steel grates. And
dude, I had that in my notes. That's so dumb.
Like, and you know what I, so to talk, we're going to talk about the match real quick, right? I love that JR and the King even say on it. I think it's JR specifically who says during that match, he's like, or no, it's King. He's like, it's not rubber out there. It could have been pad. It's not. It's just grates. And like Rob Van Dam fucks himself up on that floor like 20 times throughout that match.
Oh, it's great. And I always pop for whenever like Van Dam fucked himself up and like he would get up and like hold his ribs and like fucking. Like, oh, yeah, no, he's really hurt. But you know what? Like, that whole like, 10,000 tons of steel, like, aesthetic just always fit that particular time of WWE. You know what I mean? Whether it was the Hell in a Cell, you know, the hardcore influences that were all over at the time. But, yeah, no, it really fucking hurt, man. I'm surprised. You know, I guess they didn't, like you said, they didn't take a test run at it. They were just like, oh, okay, let's, all right, backdrop, pal. Oh, wow, you just fucked up your lower vertebrae.
Oh, you're yeah, literally
no,
dead.
Then you just get fucked up the whole time. I have in my notes being like, Bischoff's an idiot for... because I'm like, I'm so glad they changed the outside of ringside, like that weird platform.
Yeah.
Because those grates were awful.
Like, the whole aesthetic is so fucking... It's like a cage. It's like the JNCO jeans of a cage. Just yeah, big great, and great stupid and impractical. And like you look back on it 20 years later and you're like, ugh, why did I wear that?
Also,
it's funny because at this time I stopped watching. I didn't watch wrestling at this time because I was in high school. And I was like, music. I'm going to talk to girls. I don't watch wrestling. But I heard HBK came back and I was like, I'm interested, but I can't. I can't do this. Then I saw the Elimination Chamber, and I was like, what in the fuck?
What did I miss?
No.
He had a Korn moment. You had the same moment when you heard Rage Against the Machine and Korn. You're like, noise.
It's not on. That's what I said. I'm going blind.
That match, right? And like I said earlier, that match is just full of bangers. You have fucking Saliva, right, doing King of the World in New York, and that's a great fucking song. Then you have The Game. You've got Kane's theme, which, like, I feel like Kane's theme, that version of it, right, like when they revamp it a little bit and have the words, that is...
Well, it's Finger 11, right? Finger 11 sang his new theme.
Did they?
Da-da-da. It was like kind of like it's Finger 11.
It's so fits Kane. That's what WWE really did well in those days, is like their themes, even the more generic ones, fit the wrestler so much better than they tend to these days, where it's just like the same 15 second loop over and over again. And I miss that. Like, Randy Orton is one of, like, the few people that still has, like, a proper, like, him and Edge, people that have been around since that era.
I think the last great theme is probably Seth Rollins.
The Burn It Down?
Even with the added Burn It Down, like, that whole, like, metal blast is just so good.
Yeah. Here's a fun fact. Originally, the theme for this podcast was going to be me doing that track, but then just screaming FFC instead. But then I was like, probably protected under copyright. Can't do that. So then you got this trash heap instead.
Nice.
Also, if I recall correctly, it might have been the second Elimination Chamber that I think it was at SummerSlam the next year, the one with Goldberg. It might have been this one too. Chris Jericho getting speared through the door. That wasn't supposed to happen.
Oh, it wasn't?
It wasn't, and he got like incredibly fucked up as a result of it.
Fucking Goldberg, man.
Fucking Goldberg. Just the we don't say his name, we don't speak of him. We just move the fuck on. That
great
match,
guy, Hall of Famer, respect him. I don't want to see him.
Go away. Get off my goddamn television. Not interested. But that match was such like a perfect encapsulation of that era. For those that didn't watch or that aren't unfamiliar with the match, the predominant theme throughout it is Triple H walking in as champion, handpicked, you know, by the company, and then Shawn Michaels, his foil, and then a bunch of his other nemesis throughout, with Chris Jericho really being the other big heel in the match. And starts off with Rob Van Dam and Triple H, who just fuck themselves up like for 10 minutes straight. It's unreal how like hurt they got so quickly, which would prove to be a real big problem for Triple H later on.
Was RVD the first one to take a bump to the outside? Is that what we said before?
He was the first one. He took a lot of bumps to himself, but like Triple H got thrown into the gate and then opened himself up. So like, I think he was the first one really to take like a bad bump from it. But then RVD was just like doing like rolling sentons and shit onto the grates and just fucking them up because they have no give and they're painful.
Yeah.
You know, and then Jericho comes in and you have like two, you know, Jericho, Triple H fucking hate each other, but you know, Jericho's a fucking opportunist. So the Ayatollah of Corona gets together with the game and starts hammering.
The Ayatollah of Corona.
Gotta go see Fozzy, guys. Don't let Judas get out of your town without seeing him. Anyway, don't need to recap the whole match, but like, it's just such a great encapsulation of the match. You know, Booker T and his massive like leg lariats. You forget how like effective his kicks looked. You know?
Oh yeah. Well, also from the aesthetic of like six legends in a match at the same time.
Yeah.
You know? We kind of took that part for granted. But two things I wanted to mention was the star of the show was Shawn Michaels' Duty Brown Pants and...
Oh, Duty Brown Pants, yes.
Mushroom cut. I mean, my God, that guy...
Oh, dude, the hair was so bad.
It was so bad, dude. I know, and it's funny because like you always picture like 90s Shawn Michaels and like the fucking iconic white and like, you know, the mirrored hearts on his fucking... his pants, him wearing the fucking mirrored jacket, him coming down from the fucking roof. And his first match back.
Well, that's before he started losing his hair, right?
Yeah, I mean, like he was losing it at the front at this point, but the man could still grow in the back, and he was just like, "No, I want a bowl cut."
Duty Brown, yeah. Gina. When I was watching with my fiance, I don't know if this is it's funny, if not wholly accurate. When him and Chris Jericho were going at it, she had two comments. One was, "I can't understand why Chris Jericho is doing this weird Scott Ian thing. I don't like the anthrax look on him because he had the fucking ugly ass long goatee."
Was it dyed red at this point?
I think it was still brown. I think it was before he dyed it. And then her other thought was like, "Boy, it kind of looks like Chris Jericho of the past is beating up Chris Jericho of the future."
That's good.
Not Shawn Michaels' best look, but. Has a great ending with like, you know, Shawn Michaels gets in and he's the last person. So they really build up the anticipation. And then Chris Jericho eliminates like two or three people. Fun fact about the performers in that, Jericho is tied for the most appearances with Randy Orton at 8. And he has the most eliminations ever with 10 eliminations.
Wow. Okay.
Jericho's sneaky like that with a couple of like different like facts. And like accomplishments are at WWE. If I'm correct, he's still like one of the most timed people in a Royal Rumble match.
His longevity is what it speaks to and how willing he was to reinvent himself. So I think he just was always around. Triple H has the most victories with 4 because Golden Shovel.
And forgive me if I'm wrong on this or if you're going to bring it up. Triple H got like massively fucked up in this match.
So what happens to him precisely is... he like, I don't know what bump it was, but he like really fucks up his tongue or like his throat gets super swollen, which is kind of why like the end of the match, like the slog between him and Shawn is like I mean, Triple H is fucking out of it because he like kind of can't breathe. And then so like eventually, you know, it ends Shawn Michaels and Triple H going at each other, bloodied.
Wait, so what happened to his mouth?
RVD did a frog splash onto his throat.
Oh, that's what it was, because it's a fucked up, because like Triple H was a little too close to the ropes, to, like to the corner, and RVD went up to the pod. So like they both kind of misjudged how much distance he could cover and would have to cover to like do a successful five star. So instead what happens is, thank you for reminding me of the spot, Ryan, when RVD goes to do the five star, he can't jump that high because he's already at the top, and he also, Triple H is too far. So what ends up happening is he does the Jey Uso splash where he just like goes feet first, so his like knee or his feet just go straight into Triple H's neck.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's like,
shit.
It's not even a frog splash so much as it's a fucking coup d'etat.
All right.
Coup d'etat, coup de grace, sorry.
Coup d'etat.
So then, like, Shawn Michaels wins. He wins the belt. And Triple H goes to the hospital and he tells a story about how he was like, I was fucking pissed and I wanted to go home. So they're like, send me home. The doctor's like, okay, here's what's going to happen is I'm going to send you home. And then while you're asleep, your throat's going to reswell and then you're going to choke on your own blood and die. So do you want me to start getting the paperwork together and I'll discharge you? And he was like, no, I'm good. You can keep me.
Was he at Raw the next night?
I think he was still. I think, you know, he was just always that guy that I would, even if he had to show up with the gimmick neck brace.
Doofy,
which I guess,
fucking neck brace.
I guess it wasn't gimmick at this point, but yeah, no, he Triple H is always good like that. He always made a point to like show up the next night.
So the 2002, like the first one is a really good one to watch because it's just so interesting how they like, you can tell like as they're calling the match, like they really don't know how to interact in the chamber. Like they don't understand how it's supposed to work. And so that's why you see Rob Van Dam fuck himself up so much in so many spots. Not like he's just a bad botch dude. He just doesn't really understand how little give that shit had.
Yeah.
So Shawn would go on to win the event. And this would prove to be an event with an immense amount of danger to champions who enter it. Of the 18 matches with a title on the line and a defending champion in the match, champions retained 11 times, meaning you had a 39% chance of dropping the title, which when you compare that to a 30% chance in Hell in a Cell matches, and then you add Kurt Angle into the mix, and then, it's a dangerous spot for champions. And, like, this makes of sense, of course. You know, your position in the match can go a long way towards determining your odds, similar to the Royal Rumble, and everyone's going to gun for the champion from jump. And this match proved to be a spectacle on the same level as the Unforgiving Steel, crazy little brother of the Hell in a Cell match. And thus it was held only once a year from 2002 to 2006, when the recently revived ECW had an Elimination Chamber match for the ECW title at December to Dismember, which Bobby Lashley won. It's the only Elimination Chamber he's ever been in.
The worst pay-per-view of all time.
Nah, come on. It's fun. ECW. The same year, WWE title match happened at New Year's Revolution. So following that, there was a one-year hiatus, and then the match returns twice a year at No Way Out in 2008 and 2009, after which it received its own pay-per-view in 2010. Normally, like I said, either you win a title or you win a match at WrestleMania, except for 2015. 2015 does not have a WWE Championship match. Do you two know instead what had happened?
I believe IC.
Intercontinental Championship was one, yes. What was the other?
Tag team.
That was the New Day winning that
one. Hey, look at me.
Look
I'm
at you.
Two for two, baby.
Look at you big fucking smarties over here. I can't even trick yous.
But if I'm correct, they took a hiatus with it because it took like two trucks to fucking carry across the country and it was just pain in the ass.
Yeah, it's a massive ordeal. That's probably why they ended up restructuring it in 2017, because I think they like made it into a lighter material. The women have also only had one, three total. They've had their first match in 2018. 2019 was for the vacant Women's Tag Team Championship instead of the Raw or SmackDown Women's Championship. And the SmackDown Women's Championship has never been defended in a chamber match. So that's interesting. So this year again saw two chamber matches, one for Drew McIntyre's WWE Championship and another for an opportunity at Roman Reigns' Universal Championship directly after the chamber match. So to to get to the bottom of this segment, right? What were everybody's thoughts on this year's pay-per-view?
So my first note, Kofi and Orton feud still looks fresh. I don't know why. Sheamus turning his back in the little chamber thing while Drew was like eye fucking him the whole time, being like, let's go, I want blood. That was sick. At 2:29.
Oh my god, he's got timestamps.
When AJ botches the 450, it looks amazing and brutal. And then I wrote, Sheamus is a star again. Dude, he's a grizzled vet. He's like, these are the best years. Like, let's go. I want more Sheamus.
The only reason he's a star is because of how brightly he shines when those fucking lights hit his pale, translucent flesh.
Yeah, you love it. You love vampires.
What a Sheamus mark over here.
I love how he just went back to his old look, no problem. Like, he never, like, stopped.
Yeah. Dude, it does not make sense.
He looks better than he ever has. His, like, sideburns are slightly longer, and that's about it.
It's brutal looking. It's so sick. Drew versus Sheamus needs to be a match at WrestleMania. Doesn't even need a title. It'll just be brutal as fuck. Brutal is a key word. And I hate AJ Styles with that big dude.
Almost.
I get it.
Almost.
Though, it should have been the Good Brothers, but whatever. The Good Brothers are off doing better Good Brother stuff.
It brings me back to AJ being flanked by Bad Luck Fale. Is what it makes me think of. Just AJ, tiny little AJ being next to this massive Hulk of a human being.
You know, I don't even remember that. That's how, like, insignificant that was.
Well, because it's his time in New Japan. So, like, Bad Luck Fale is the big-ass Tongan dude that helped start Bullet Club. So he's, like, this gigantic rugby player. And that's what it makes me think of. It's just...
Oh, wait. I thought you were talking about some other person. Why did I not think of that?
Tyson Tomko?
Probably that. He did the same thing.
It sounds like a fake name.
I mean, it's also like HBK with Diesel.
Yeah, I mean, that...
Yeah.
That thing has been going
back.
That's
obviously what they're trying
years.
To do.
Yeah.
Except for this... I don't know, dude. Like, you couldn't do it with Braun, and you're not going to be able to do it with this guy.
Like, I kind of love AJ... Like, AJ Styles, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, just being like... beat the shit out of you, don't let him. It's just being held back by this Goliath of a man. It's kind of funny to me.
It's not for me.
Yeah, it's something different with him, you know, if he's still going to play like the smarmy heel.
Why not?
He might as well have a helper with him.
Then I wrote, at 2:24, Claymore in the air was so sick.
Oh, I mean,
yeah.
Come on now.
And
that is
AJ's foot. Going back, I was like, oh, you hurt your leg again. And then I was like, oh, it's wrestling. Never mind.
Dude, is there any, like, there's a lot of, we talk about, like, Dolph Ziggler being the best seller in the business or, like, The Rock. But, like, I look at people like Dolph and The Rock and, like, they're great sellers. Yeah, they make you look great. But it's, like, comical the way they flop around. AJ Styles is actually the best seller in the business. No one makes
Dude,
it like look as real
as him. Movie. It's like watching an action movie. Like that, he's Mel Gibson. Like, just falling around.
He went for a fucking phenomenal forearm, gets hit with the Claymore, and just looks like he fucking died. It was... What a spot. Yeah. That was really... That was a top-tier spot. I felt like the match overall was okay, but AJ and Drew were excellent throughout the entire match. I mean, all of them were good. Nobody was bad.
I was surprised by how Orton got eliminated, and I don't even remember how he got eliminated.
No, I didn't even realize. I thought he walked off. I thought he was doing a heel thing again, like in the Royal Rumble.
Oh, he jumped out and just walked off?
No, I thought that's what he did, but he got eliminated. He was like the first one to go.
Oh. Then I have Bobby Lashley is a star too. He's sick. Crowd booing virtually is funny. Full Nelson Slam looked bad. Miz rules. Superstar.
Anthony jumped straight to the end of the pay-per-view. Okay,
well, that's
cool.
Fine. We had to talk about it anyway. I want to bring this up. Let's talk Bobby Lashley.
Bobby Lashley.
Obviously, Bobby Lashley's reformation with the Hurt Business is fucking awesome. MVP has been just an absolute star since he came back.
Oh God, it's been such a revelation. By the way, not to interrupt your point, but did you know that MVP is the first IWGP Intercontinental Champion?
No, I
did not know that. That's
when the belt got introduced before it became like Shinsuke Nakamura's belt. He won the inaugural tournament, so he's the first ever New Japan Intercontinental Champion.
That's funny.
But yeah, you know, I mean, Bobby Lashley was awesome back in the day. I guess it, like, I don't know. Anthony, you were checked out at this point, right?
I started watching ECW when it came back.
Oh, okay.
I hated Bobby Lashley. I was like, I don't get it.
He fits that huge hoss of a man. But I think as long as he has, you know, someone like Drew at Mania or someone that he can just really go and work with, I think he's going to have an awesome match at Mania, whoever it will be. Honestly, like, fucking get Brock in there. Fuck it.
I mean, Bobby just talked about how, like, it seems like someone is conspiring to keep them away from each other because they've never interacted, not in MMA, not in a wrestling ring. They've just never been anywhere near one another.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I'm a guy that, like, I always liked Bobby Lashley, but he was never like a favorite. He was just kind of a guy, and I was like, you know, he's just like big for nothing. But
I feel like right now he's grizzled on like just the right amount. Like he needed that TNA time.
Yeah, just like Drew.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like he needed the like Drew Galloway reformation in TNA before he could really become the guy. And you know, Bobby's 44, so he's like a year older than AJ, but he just looks incredible in every match that he's in. And like his talking has gotten better. And MVP, like his whole shit with the Hurt Business really works. And I'm really curious to see how the Hurt Business, like if they can keep this momentum going as writers until they get fans back. Because like Bobby really deserves a lot of credit for how he's been the ace of the Hurt Business. And, you know, I was surprised to see The Miz cash in successfully, but I think that it was definitely well deserved. He's a guy that I think has earned that for sure. It sucks that he's gonna have to get squashed like an insect for Bobby, but I'm also here for it.
That's definitely happening.
They're gonna face each other next week because Braun could have made it a triple threat if he beat Bobby on Raw, but he lost.
That's great. Miz's life leaving his face as they announced that like he's gonna be in a triple threat was actually pretty.
I'm going to give WWE some rare credit on this podcast. I mean, Ryan is definitely more quick to give the Fed their due.
I'm the Stan.
I'm all about New York, baby.
I'm a fucking hater, but I'm going to give WWE some credit. Even though this pay-per-view overall to me kind of felt like, there are some, I mean, look, they got a lot of stories that are not working for me at all. Like the Charlotte Ric Flair thing doesn't make sense to me. And I don't fucking care. I'm not here for it. Feel like they don't know what they're doing with Asuka anymore. So like, you might as well just fucking take the belt off of her at this point. There's a lot of things that aren't working, but Drew has been just like their champions for the better part of 2020 have just been off the wall. Incredible. Drew and Roman were perfect champions throughout this era, and I'm not sure that Drew wins the title back, and he probably shouldn't. Bobby is, I think, the right guy, but I'm curious whether Roman loses to Edge or not. Will they go with two heel champions?
It's hard to see Edge win and be the one who formally defeats Roman on this run. The SmackDown Elimination Chamber was fucking awesome, man. They really have a good roster. I think we're going to look back at this time for SmackDown. And it was important for them to hit a home run with this roster in this particular like moment in time for SmackDown because they're on Fox. Agreed. And they're actually pulling in good numbers, but this is like a very good time for it. That match was fucking awesome. I like that a little more than the Raw match. Cesaro,
I liked it substantially more, yeah.
Cesaro looked like a fucking $1 million. I mean, look, you know, he's probably not going to get the title. But you know what? At the end of the day in wrestling, you know, we still remember the Hurricane for moments back in the day. You know, we're always going to remember Cesaro as like just this absolute workhorse. And, you know, as long as he's able to show off like fucking doing fucking pull-ups in the goddamn fucking chain-linked roof of the Elimination Chamber, like he's always going to have those moments. Daniel Bryan, still looking like a million bucks.
He's been so good since he came back. Like,
and it was a shame that they had to do like that. Like, it was good for Heat, but I mean, like, it was a shame he had to like do the match immediately after the Elimination Chamber.
You skipped Anthony's notes. Let him get his notes in.
Hold on. Yeah, I'm sorry. I have more notes from the previous. I wrote Money in the Bank is the best thing WWE has created since the Rumble. Yeah. Sorry, Trips, about the Elimination Chamber.
It is what it is.
I said, Miz is a future Hall of Famer. Great bad guy. Still don't know why they gave Money in the Bank to Otis. But I guess that was a swerve?
Are you denying Otis?
I know that Otis is over, but without a crowd, what?
Yeah, I think they just wanted to do something fun and him, like,
I think that it was a very fun moment with absolutely no sense in story, and I agree. Like, I don't really know why we did it.
And then I think they threw it to the Miz just to give the Miz just some background heat so that he could take it.
Yeah, it worked.
And run.
I would have rather that than Otis lose on a cash-in.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that would have just buried Otis.
Right. They're burying Otis!
I agree. And Miz, I think if anybody tries to argue that Miz is not one of the best of his generation, I think you're insane. Because, first off, the Miz across wrestling in all eras is one of the best promos in wrestling history. I really feel comfortable saying that. Sure, you can make the argument that, like, he kind of does the same promo every time, the impassioned, you don't take me seriously promo, but he's believable every fucking time, and it's what separates him from people like Dolph Ziggler, who, like, also cut really good promos, but only do the same one, and it loses its luster. Miz backs it up. Like, he's a two-time Grand Slam champion. He's the first one to ever do it. He's been consistent. I mean, I think he said that at Raw. Like, all of these dudes came and gone, but 15 years later, I'm still here. He was the guy with backstage heat. He was just some reality star, but he worked his fucking ass off. In my opinion, Miz is, like, perfectly serviceable to above average in the ring. He's very safe. You rarely have bad matches with him in it. But he really, really understands psychology and is one of the best to ever hold a mic, I think.
Yeah, no, he's a star. Dude, he's done so much for the company, and, like, even when he started out writing information on his hand as he was being the host of Raw or whatever. Or no, it was the Diva Search, one of those. But, like, dude, he has terrible merch. He just had incredible heat, and he's still there. It's insane. It's just insane.
He's still there.
It's baffling.
Yeah, that made me feel old when you said fucking 15 years.
15 years, dude.
Yeah.
And like, is anyone going to try and argue that, you know, the Intercontinental Championship isn't going to be known to someone like Pedro Morales or, you know, Pat Patterson? Or no, like, of course, I know those are the people you think of, but honestly, at least in this generation, I look at The Miz as the Shinsuke in Japan version of the Intercontinental Championship. Like,
yeah.
The Miz, I believed him 100% when he was like, I made this belt the top belt in WWE. Like, his reigns, every single one of his reigns, his matches with that belt has felt consequential. It's felt important. And it's like he really helped turn that belt around in a dark period.
Yeah,
and I mean, I hope he gets one last reign after this to break Pedro Morales' record.
I think he definitely will. But, like, you know, we felt the immediate heat of him stealing back the fucking title from Zack Ryder the very next night after that Mania win. That's his belt.
No, yeah, we did feel that.
It really doesn't matter because they're both such good friends. Like,
right. No, exactly. It doesn't matter because, like, we were all pissed off at that time. But you know what? We're always going to remember fucking Zack Ryder.
But that, yeah, grabbing that told that story, like, perfectly. Like, oh, Ryder grabbed the belt. Never mind. I don't want to go into
Heath
it.
Ryder. Well, no, it was like they all backstage before because, like, someone got hurt or something like that, and Zack Ryder was the last minute addition. And, you know, yeah, like in the movie Rudy, when all the players, like, fucking put their jerseys on the desk because the coach won't play Rudy, everybody backstage is just like, we want Zach to win 100%.
And like, that moment, yeah, it fucking sucked, but, like, it wouldn't have sucked as much if they did enough, if they, like, would have done something with Zach afterwards. That's the bigger issue, is that, like, that moment could have been just really great heel heat for The Miz, and then you know, you still remember the mania moment and everything else he did, but they did nothing else with him. I also guessed that moment correctly. We were watching at a good friend and Modern Static Records co-founder Travis Gentile's house, and we did a little drinking game, and I was like, oh, fucking Zack Ryder's gonna win. I wasn't even watching wrestling, and I was like, all right, Damian, Zack Ryder's gonna, and then he did, and I just looked at everyone and went, fuck you, suck my dick, fuck you, I'm well, right.
It's a shame you didn't put a bet on that, because I think his return was like 2001 or some shit like that.
Oh,
and
I would have,
like,
made a lot of money.
Yeah, you would have.
But yeah, no, the SmackDown one was great, and Roman just continues to be like arguably the best heel in the business. Just like so smart. He's so smart in the universe, but also while he never gets like match comeuppance, he gets fucked with a lot. Like Edge's promo on like SmackDown before with Roman just over the last couple of weeks being like, you need to pick me for the main event. Like I need to be the main event. And Edge just being like, dude, I'm playing you like a fiddle, and you like don't even realize it. Edge's promo as like he's supposed to be the grizzled baby face was so good. Just being like, you're just too stupid to get what I'm doing to you, and you're begging me for this match, and you don't even know what I'm gonna do. Classic Edge, and him coming out spearing him after was just like so fucking good.
Do you want my notes for this Elimination Chamber as well?
Go on, Tony. Give us your notes, baby.
So, Uso is a star. It's great.
Yeah, he really is. He really is.
Jay's great.
When he beats Reigns for either a title or just beats him, it will be massive. And then Uso will be the next guy.
He will 100%. He's not going to take the title from him. But whenever Roman loses the belt, 100% Jay is going to go over in a feud. I am very confident of that.
I'm reminded to think of Jeff Hardy when Jeff Hardy started doing a solo run, and I don't think Jay will get to that level, but it's certainly reminding me of that, where it was just like, oh, I kind of always thought of Jeff Hardy as like a tag team guy, but like as a singles person, he's killing it. I really appreciate the run.
That's funny. I was like, this seems so familiar, but So Cesaro is a future Hall of Famer. Should leave WWE, though. He is a star on his own.
Yeah.
Broken sentences, whatever. Oh, here's the note. Glad they got rid of the steel floor. Bischoff was dumb for thinking that was cool.
You know what that's called, Anthony? That's called long-term booking.
Yeah.
Bring that note back, baby.
Then I have Kevin Owens with 3 exclamation points. So good. Does not need a title. Needs a new haircut, though.
Yeah, me and Ryan were talking the other day about like performers that don't get titles, but that just kind of transcend belts. And like Kevin Owens is a little bit one of those guys where like he's never not believable. It doesn't really matter where he is in the card. He's just such a good promo.
Dude,
he's
him
so
bashing
intense.
His face against the plexiglass.
Oh, just fucking headbutting it with Jay, like, look, oh, so good.
I don't know
good.
If it was actually headbutting. I think he was, like, pushing his fist on it.
If he was, he was hiding it from the camera, because it looked like he was headbutting it.
Zayn needs new music. Him and Kevin Owens need a feud. A good one. ROH level.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about their feud. Not gonna lie.
Well, it wasn't
Kevin Owens
them.
Was just talking it was... about it. No. Yeah, it was somebody that looks a lot like Sami Zayn.
Yeah, in a mask.
It was El Generico, who is suspected to be related to Sami, but it's not Sami.
Well, yeah,
it's okay. It's
New
okay
Mexico
that you don't remember
with,
that.
The homeless? I don't remember.
Yeah.
Orphans.
D-Bry rules. Shirt's bad. LOL. And then my app crashed, and I wrote, WWE app sucks. Hope Peacock is better. Spear versus Spear is best for business. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That was sweet.
I got to tell you, Anthony, this is what the people really wanted to hear out of this was your timestamp notes, and I appreciate the level of dedication you had coming onto this podcast, which, as everybody knows, is a real rigorous affair filled with factoids, and you really need to be on your A game, and you brought it, and I appreciate that.
I'm a B+ player with an A+ attitude.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, that the United States Championship match was fun. Riddle goes over, makes sense for the feud. Sucks that Keith Lee wasn't in that match. Keith Lee should have all the belts, but what are you gonna do? Is it just me, or like, did that women's match feel inconsequential and stupid?
Yeah, there was no chemistry there, but I mean, like, it was a throwaway match. I'm not really.
And I love Bianca and Sasha, and it just like wasn't. It didn't. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, the true story there is that Bianca will have her title match at WrestleMania, presumably. I guess against Sasha. I guess they're gonna eventually.
Yeah, that's what it is, and it's gonna be great. And I hope Bianca goes over. Overall, I thought the pay per view was fine. I feel like a lot of WWE pay per views have been fine, if not spectacular, with a couple of like really good ones.
Yeah.
But the SmackDown's Chamber, I think, like, holds up. I think it lives up to the moniker. And so I'm curious. So Mania is going to be the first event that has fans there. They're going to be doing it in Tampa Bay, despite the fact that Kairi Sane will not be there to do a pirate entrance. So that sucks. But
Kevin Owens is jumping off of that ship.
Oh, 100%. Somebody's getting it. And I'm so curious to know, like, what fan, like, I'm curious to know how fans receive some of the stuff that that we hate or love, because you don't know, because they're like just pumping in booze and, like you said, like, fucking piped in booze and cheers fucking suck. Don't give me piped in yes chants. Ew, gross.
I'll take it, though. I'll take any fake fan interaction right now.
It's going to be a hot crowd. They're going to be pumped for everything. So I think that's going to be the...
Dude, think about how good it's going to be to see people in a crowd again.
Mm-hmm.
And then just their reaction going, holy shit, I'm just happy to see shit.
Yeah, exactly. Because the Super Bowl, despite it being one third of the size, was still loud. And people, you know, marked out for everything. And I you know... Whenever WWE better not like kind of fuck this up. Whenever they get like a full arena show back, they need to go balls to the wall, because that crowd is going to be, it's going to be hot. So, you know, they're
Lesnar's
setting themselves
coming
up for
out.
Something good.
You can quote me on this.
All right.
Lesnar at will Mania? Be the first person out, or The Rock.
Rocky, I could absolutely see Rocky coming out at the end of Mania. Like, if Roman beats Edge, I could see Rock showing up and just looking at him.
I got insurance clearance, baby. We're doing this next year.
That's why I got vaccinated, just so I can go to an event. Maybe we'll go to see Blood and Guts, like AEW is supposed to give us. You know, it's the road to WrestleMania. I think we've only got one podcast. We only got one pay-per-view left, right? Fastlane, and then that's it. Yep. Mania.
Mm-hmm. Wow, they're doing Fastlane again?
They're doing Fastlane because they got to get Bobby the belt.
Yeah, plus they moved WrestleMania back like 2 weeks or something like that, so they need...
Oh,
they
can't just have, for time.
Yeah, they can't... WWE can't handle a month and a half without a paper, so...
So overall, Anthony, on a scale of no thumbs to four thumbs, how many thumbs?
Three.
Three thumbs? That's a strong thumb rating. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I'll give it three. The meat potatoes of the fucking pay-per-view was Elimination Chamber, and they did a great job with both. So that's really what it counts. It's just really funny to think that the pay-per-view was shorter than Raw, but, you know, they needed to do that. They had to stop doing the fucking four-hour pay-per-views.
I give it two thumbs and one broken thumb. So it gets two and a half broken thumbs.
There you go. A little pinky action.
Little pinky action. So as we begin to wrap up this behemoth of an interview with one of the most esteemed guests this podcast has ever had, Anthony, what comes next? Not for you in the podcast.
For me?
No, not for you. I don't care about you. What comes next in the podcast? What's the next segment?
I don't remember. I'm sorry.
This fucking
well, check your phone.
Wait.
Oh, shit.
Doesn't fucking watch the product.
Legend Killer, baby. So, I sent Damien and Anthony a past photo of a superstar where they have to guess who it is exactly. And I was actually really proud of this one. I found this one the other night on Instagram, and I was like, holy shit, this is fucking amazing. So if you know it already off the bat, don't say anything right away. But if you don't know, try to take two guesses.
Okay, so my first guess would be Stone Cold.
That is correct. This is Stone Cold.
Yeah, wait. Let's go.
I knew the answer, but what Steve Austin is it?
Oh, this is definitely Hollywood Blonde.
It's stunning. It's stunning Steve Austin.
Are you sure it's not ECW?
Did he have hair in ECW?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
And then he buzzed it.
Okay.
But I think he was still stunning Steve Austin in ECW, wasn't he?
This has to be WCW before Bischoff fired him.
Right, when he was tagging with Pillman.
What?
But dude, look at this fucking shot, man. Look at
this. Yeah, it's Hollywood Blondes, right? It's Hollywood Blondes Austin. Yeah.
I think it was when he was feuding with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
That's crazy to think about, man. I really gotta go back and like log some 90s WCW.
Dude,
at the same
stun
time,
gun is the perfect finish.
What was
it
that
makes
again?
Sense.
Was it a variation of the stunner where it was like a pile driver?
No, isn't it just a cutter?
No, he would just lift someone's neck into the ropes and like hang them on the neck.
Oh, interesting. I'm thinking of the gun stun, which is Tamatanga and Carl Anderson's.
Yeah. No, it's not good, but it's great.
I think Stone Cold made the right move in shaving his head, because there's some thinness. There's some thinness there.
Well, you know, it's funny, because we always try to choose, like, pictures of stars, like, when they were, like, their most vulnerable. And I'm looking at this guy, and I just can't see him dominating the late 90s in wrestling.
Oh, no.
You can't see the anger in his eyes.
Book me, Bischoff.
You know what's funny, though, is like, I have been tricked many a time in a Legend Killer by a lack or... but either by a lack of facial hair or by facial hair that I, like, wasn't expecting to be there. So I've become wise to Ryan's little fucking wizardry tricks. So now I put fingies over mustache areas, and then it all came together. It all came together. I was like, oh, come on.
I think that was your first guess one. So there you go.
But. No, I have a couple. I guessed Kenta correctly, and you were surprised.
Oh, of course. Because
I got Kenta immediately. I was like, oh, it's Kenta. And you're like, oh.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is Kenta.
What do you do? You type the baby Stone Cold photos.
Baby Stone Cold.
Well, it all derived from when I saw that fucking picture of Ric Flair from like 1975 when he's like fucking beefed up and like he's bald. I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? And then, I just went, I type in like rookie fucking photos and stuff like that. I can't type in young man Stone Cold, like young boy Stone Cold onto fucking Google. So I use rookie.
the whole concept of Legend Killer, is that it's taking like a lesser known gimmick from well-known superstars. And then I have to try and guess because I'm fucking face blind and can't guess anything.
That's hysterical.
Well, it's also like a beneficial for us because, you know, everybody has to start somewhere and fucking, you know, Kevin.
Yeah, I know
Kevin
a few
Nash.
Of them I've guessed. I've commented on the Instagram post and I'm like, this is so-and-so.
You got to have
Damian's
Kevin Nash.
Like, how the fuck did you get that?
I'm always fucking pissed, dude. I fucking posted the last episode on Reddit and they're like, oh, that's Scott Hall, right? And I was like, congratulations, you're better at this than I am. Go be on the podcast.
That's great.
Great.
So, now that the Legend Killer is done, we have one last segment to get to. Anthony, do you want to try to redeem yourself? Do you know what this segment is?
No, I have no clue.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't fucking watch the product. Fuck you.
No, you're fucking giving me criticism for yelling about his timestamps, and you're yelling at our guest here. So
I will yell at our guest. Our guest has been really kind to give us a lot of his time. He's not working out, so he can come talk to us and drink water, and I appreciate that. And the way that I show my appreciation is I mock and I yell at, and then I feel bad about it afterwards. So
I gotta go eat some shrimp tacos.
Oh,
you're lucky I haven't taken a shit on this podcast. All right. You're lucky I just haven't shit on this chair. The last segment dear Tony, is what have you been listening to lately? And as our esteemed guest, I would love if you would go first.
Oh, God.
I want to be clear. The time for self-promotion will come after, so...
No, I know. I just went upstate to hang out with the Lost Becomes guys, and on my way back, I met up with Nick Lee from Moontooth. And we went to socially distanced, masked, all that jazz, playing it safe. And he told me, I'm like, what have you been listening to lately? Like, because I'm like, I don't know. Like, I've just been like, I need something newer. Like, and he goes, oh, well, I've been listening to a lot of country and like singer-songwriter stuff. And I'm like, who have you been listening to? And he told me the singer-songwriter, Jason Isbell.
Oh, yeah. Jason Isbell in the 400 unit.
There, yeah. But
I knew the whole name.
The album Southeastern, like the past, I mean, it's only Tuesday, but I've been listening to this in the shower and or on my way home, and like anxiety is just gone. Like, I don't know. It's good, like reflection music. And then I also found this band, Left to Vanish. They were on Revolver because I was on Revolver, so I was just on the page masturbating to myself.
That's right, he was.
And this band, Left to Vanish, they're actually members of A Life Once Lost.
Sick.
And this song, Healthy, it's featuring Jesse Leach, and it's kind of this like repetitive guitar riff. Like, it's genty, but like not super gent. Like, not complicated at all. It's just the same riff over and over again. It just fucking rocks.
Okay. But
that's what I've been listening to.
Very nice. Ryan, what about you?
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't fucking mention that Gojira, after 5 long years, mm-hmm. has finally mm-hmm. released some new material.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe it's been 5.
I know. It's been too long, but they are fucking back, and they came back strong as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
New album is going to be dropping, Fortitude. We don't have to wait that long for it. It's going to come out in April. And they released
The two singles together? I'm sorry to interrupt you this whole podcast, but...
No, it's fine. They did.
No. The one before, what was it? Between Worlds or...
Another World.
Another World. That was dropped months ago, wasn't it?
Right.
Didn't they drop that as a single months ago, and then they packaged it with the new song?
Right. And then, which I thought was a one-off, but no, it's going to be on the sound. But the true star is Born From One Thing. And
it rips.
Like, oh, so good.
Whatever. Like, they have the torch. I'm not going to fucking debate it anymore. You know what I mean? Like,
I think that they're a legacy act already.
Yeah. We have to start, like, putting them in frame of Lamb of God and Meshuggah and Mastodon. Like, it's time for them to get the respect that they're due. But I'm absolutely hyped for this album. It's going to be a banger. Funny quick story with Gojira that, you know, when I won a contest to meet Lamb of God at Gigantor in 2006.
All and, 18 of the contests you won to meet Lamb of God.
All 18 of the contests, yes. Because essentially I was the only one from Long Island, like, entering the contest. But anyway.
Biggest Randy Blythe fan in the world.
100%. But before I left,
anyway,
because I
was Doyle, yeah, Misfits.
Because I was in. Because I was
he just
a
won't let the story get out.
Let me tell my stories.
sorry.
Anyway,
so being the noob I was like, "When are you guys listening to?" And like, Randy grabbed me by both shoulders, and he was just like, "Listen to Gojira." He's like, "Fuck the rest of the show. Go home and listen to Gojira." And it was funny because I mentioned it to Nick Lee Anthony. I was like, "I wish I could fucking relive the moment of putting on For Mars Is Serious and listening to Ocean Planet for the first time." Because not a lot of bands hit you like that, and they're certainly one of those bands, and I just can't wait for this release, so it's going to be great.
Not to interrupt the other bands that you're going to list here, but to your point about like putting them in the heavy hitters of like Lamb of God and all that shit, I think absolutely they've been there for a while, because like For Mars Is Serious came out, I think, in 2004, right, which is the same year that, what is the album that Laid to Rest is on?
Sacrament.
Sacrament. Isn't that 2004 or 2006 even?
Oh no, that's not Sacrament. That's Ashes of the Wake.
Ashes of the Wake. Yeah.
Yeah.
My bad.
But 100%, like, I remember exactly where I was. I remember it was like 2009, I think, because I found him a little late, and I would listen to metal in my Italian class because I was like, I don't fucking want to learn Italian. I'm too cool for this. Fuck this stupid language. So I would just listen to music. And one of the bands that I would listen to was Gojira. And I remember the first time I listened to Ocean Planet and just the, just what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
They are, without a doubt, I think the most uniquely recognizable band in metal today.
Yeah, you know when you're listening to Gojira. It's just like Meshuggah.
Yeah, you know exactly who it is. But I'm sorry, Ryan, please continue.
Oh, that's fine. The other band I listen to is Fuming Mouth. And they're fucking awesome.
Oh, I've heard of them.
Yeah, they're great. They're like Obituary and Hatebreed mixed together, but like they give a good fucking like a good fucking sound. They have like that big like Carl from Mr. Signal is like just like this open-ended scream throughout, like they're just screaming down like a hallway or like in a parking garage. It's really cool. My friend Colin showed me them, and I'm gonna definitely listen, check out more of their stuff.
What about you, Damien?
Okay, so I took a little bit of a step back in the past. So what I listened to was Planetary Duality, The Faceless, which was another one of those albums that I like discovered in 2009. Tech Death, Michael Keane, I believe, is the guitar player, if I'm not mistaken. One of the most infamous dudes in music, in metal, but also like one of the albums that made me understand what like tech death was as a genre, just like absurd riffing and just so fucking fast. So definitely need to give that a shout out. Recently, like today, I started listening to a band called Drab Majesty, which is a band whose whole aesthetic is like 80s synthwave. They're like shoegazy synthwave. So if that's like a vibe you're looking for, I would highly recommend their album, Modern Mirror. And then one other album that I was spinning a little bit. I'll give two. The new Teenage Wrist album, Earth is a Black Hole, that came out on February 12th, and that is the album of the year for me so far. If you're into like basement, you know, kind of like alternative rock punk type shit, some sad boy shit, really strongly recommend that. And because I'm a child toddler who's still listening to too much black metal, Thy Mighty Contract by Rotting Christ, the debut album from the Greek Titans. That's one that I would recommend. So that's what I've been listening
that,
to.
That Teenage Wrist album, that song Silver Spoon, I was listening to like early in the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
It's a bop.
Is Neil a fan of that band?
I have no idea. He won't pick up my calls.
He'll probably hate it. Professor Punk definitely won't like
that. Professor Punk, oh my God.
He's too busy pretending to have an English accent.
All right. So that's what we've got here. So Anthony, again, I really do appreciate you coming on and giving some really honest, great answers from, you know, about your writing to your career in music to what you're doing now. So please, the floor is yours. Give us your platform. Anything you want to promote, go for it. This is your Hot Ones. You've survived the 10 Wings moment.
What camera do I look at?
You look at swivel your chair around. Yeah, there you go.
All right. So, you can find Lost Becomes at Lost Becomes on Instagram. One word. You can find me at Waste, Waste 039 on Instagram. Thracian _ official on Instagram. And for all Lost Becomes stuff, we just released a single called Memory. You can find that everywhere you stream, or you can go to the Lost Becomes Instagram and check the link tree. And Thracian released a two single, I guess it's called. I don't know. But there's two songs in this one single thing. It's called House. And the songs are called House and Spoonerism. Go check that out. And that's pretty much it. That's all that I got.
Did Kevin didn't play on those, right? He's been writing with you guys.
No, he actually joined after that was recorded. And I sent him those demos, and I was like, if you want to learn these, and then he learned them in 5 minutes, and he's amazing.
He's a very good guitar player. I'm lucky to have played with him.
Yeah.
I will dig a little bit. I'll be a little messy. Is there any little nugget of an Easter egg or a little thing you can drop on here as to what's coming next?
Right now there's nothing. Like, there's no news yet. We're mapping stuff out. Honestly, I know that's not juicy, but just like every band, I mean, right now it's tough to be in a new band trying to get your name out there, but we're just trying our best for Lost Becomes. Thracian, we are definitely just writing right now. Like, Kevin and Sweeney have, shout out to Marking Out, another wrestling podcast. They just joined, so they're still, there have been some setbacks, but we're working on that. And we have like 4 songs written, I think. But, yeah, with Lost Becomes, we have nothing yet. But Thracian, okay. There's stuff hopefully around the corner.
Well, definitely hyped to hear it, bud.
Yeah, it's okay. You're allowed to not have any juicy tidbits.
Just pay attention to the socials, I guess I'll say.
As long as you say the following sentence. I can confirm that this is the first interview that I have ever given since I joined Lost Becomes. To say that
I can confirm that this is the second interview.
Not what I said. Not what I said. He's dropping other people's podcasts on here. He's lying to the people. I don't even know what the point
is. You know what? This is the first and the only. I'm done after this.
There we go.
There we go.
Going to become a fucking recluse after this. That's what I'm talking about. We will be dropping all of Lost Becomes and Anthony's socials on here in the details. Please go check them out. Be sure to check out Thracian. Go check out all of Anthony's many, 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 many side projects. You can also catch him on a little guest spot on a Transience song on our first album. See if you can locate him. And again, you know, we're just so pleased to be able to have you on and give you the respect that you rightfully deserve in this scene. You've been a workhorse, and you deserve a little bit of shine. You deserve the rub, baby.
You know I don't take compliments well, so I'll just say thanks, man. Means a lot.
Tony, let your light shine down.
All right, so for Anthony Capozzi, for Ryan Doyle, and for myself, this has been the most electrifying must-listen-to podcast in sports entertainment. This has been, Anthony, sing us out.
Well, my name was Damien, my name was Doyle, gonna go talk about some wrestling.
Good enough. This has been FFCC.